Hi, everybody. My name is Denise. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My favorite things to talk about, steps 10, 11, and 12, which are the heart of what we talk about. There's no destination here, obviously, but the life that we get to lead is what's talked about in 10, 11, and 12. The first sentence that hit me when I finally had an awakening, when I arrived at this point, was, "We entered the world of the spirit." What does that mean? Interesting statement, isn't it? We have entered the world of the spirit. Prior to having this experience and being awakened, I was living according to my mind, driven by my mind, by my ego. So when they say that we have entered the world of the spirit, I'm going to adopt a new way of living now, spiritual living, being led by spirit, no longer by mind. It's going to require some effort on my part, in a sense, of creating a process of worship, discipline, practice. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. Whenever I talk about these three steps, I always like to bring my books with me, but Bill, like, blindsided me, and I didn't have a chance. I, like, flew in from work, and here I am. But it's something that we're not used to, living this way. And it's something that we have to adopt as a lifelong process. I was so used to living my life knee-jerking through every situation, reacting to every situation based on fear or based on what I thought you were going to say or based on an illusion in my mind, because right from the very start, you know, we all suffer from an illusion of reality. My reality is a false reality right in the very beginning, right? I see a picture that others don't see, and it's not just other alcoholics, my family, my friends. They recognize this in me way before I can even begin to get a glimpse of who I am. I start to have an awakening in step one. God holds up a mirror of truth for me. I've shared it with some of you in this room. I was thinking about it on the ride here. It was a song. I can't find my way home. Interesting lyrics. I looked it up, right? About a year or so after I recovered. Stevie Winwood wrote the song, "Come down off your throne." What does that mean? Ego. "And leave your body alone." Not about the body. Somebody's got to change, right? "You are the reason I've waited so long." The mind. Right? That's what it talks about. Right? And I've been wasting so much time living in this veil of delusion that I can't see the truth from the false, not only about my alcoholism, but about life. Because what I believed was that there was a God out there somewhere, and I just couldn't get to him somehow. Even though I attempted so many ways to try to find this God. I mean, in my path to seek an answer. I started young. I read books like, you know, Journey to Ixalan, Carlos Castaneda, Siddhartha. I became a born-again Christian in my early 20s after I experienced years of psychedelics and, you know, a lot of other stuff. You know, I'm a child of the 60s and the 70s. But I always wanted to know what else there was out there. And with me, with this alcoholic, I did believe that there was something else. But it was out there. The great reality, and our book talks about it, and every spiritual path, by the way, talks about it, is that it can only be found in one place. Deep within. Here. I wasted 50 years looking out there when it's here. Deep within me. That's why I know and experience. And I can't even use the word know when we talk about spirit. The only word that we could really use is experience, right? Because if I try to describe this, you try to think of a word that describes it. I don't know. It can only be experience. You know, because for me, having that experience, even that in that first step of hearing that song, I Can't Find My Way Home, and knowing within that that was God calling me, and I was drunk and whacked out of my mind, you wouldn't relate to that, would you? So it was personal to me, and it was the first time in my life that I knew that this power that I couldn't define knew my heart. And I knew that this power was directly in contact with me. And when we talk about step 10, 11, and 12, it's the process of staying in that conscious contact with this power. I've defined the problem in the first step, right? I've said it's hopeless. You know, when I hear people talk about the first step and they say, oh, it's a relief, I say, you didn't get the first step, did you? Because it was painful and agonizing for me. It wasn't a relief. I felt utterly hopeless and that there was nowhere else for me to turn. So I had to turn to something. Left with no options, I turned to this power that I believed was out there, that wouldn't work for me, that I was pissed off at, that I blamed for every problem in my life, but because I knew I was dying, I didn't want to die. And I did, and I didn't know how my life was going to turn out, but I wanted to live. That was the key. I wanted to live. I knew who I was, and I wanted to live. So I completely surrendered and said, okay, the jig is up, right? I surrender. I'll do this thing. The willingness came from that experience. I go through this whole inventory process and find out some great truths about me that, you know, I'm not a victim. I'm a volunteer, and I'm really not a nice person. I really have a motive for every single thing that I do in life, even if it shows up in a pretty picture, right? Like, you know, I could really be kind. I love what it talks about. You know, isn't the alcoholic a self-seeker even when he's trying to be kind? You know, so the 10th step talks about that. In my daily walk, when I step out of my door, that's when I'm in step 10, right? And there's action words in that step. Turn, right? Vigorously. Commence, right? Go in, pause. All of these words are action words, guides for living a spiritual way of life. The chapter, How It Works, what's it? Was explained to me, it is God consciousness, which is what I need to live, gets me to this point. So arrived at this point, it says, I've entered the world of the spirit. Well, guess what? The world of the spirit was already here. I the veil of delusion just got lifted, and now I begin to live this journey, this way of life, which, if I think that I have to do it on my own, can be a daunting task. I don't. I only have to do a couple of simple things. Seek is one of the biggest things, or the biggest thing. I should say, am I a seeker, or am I seeking to steal your experience? No. Do I want to sound good, or do I really want to find out what this power is? And I'm really not attached to what you think of me anymore. When I raise my hand in a meeting, am I worrying about what verbiage my voice will carry? Or am I speaking from the heart, from an experience, because I know that this will help save somebody's life. I know that, based on my own experience. God has shown me that in my path. It's given me a purpose for living. With all his successes, and I've had successes in my life, I never felt fulfilled until I adopted this way of living. And that's what step 10 is about. You know, it's about checking my motives throughout the day in thought, in word, in deed, almost like a walking meditation. And the longer I stay sober, the longer I practice this way of living, the more natural it becomes to me. In the beginning, it wasn't natural. Everything was God. oh, look at him, he's sober this many years. He's sent from God. You know, and I don't spend time. I don't sit down. I don't sit in that silence, which, by the way, is the only place that I get to experience this power. I hear people say, I prayed on it. I don't know what that means. You know, because in order for me to hear or feel this intuitiveness or this knowingness within me, the only way I can hear it is by shutting off the 1,000 chattering monkeys in my brain. I've done things like, let me call you, so you can co-sign my bullshit, because I don't want to be wrong, instead of stopping and saying, okay, show me the answer. What do you want me to do here? All day long. Guys, I'm in a sales job. Talk about crazy. All day long, I am in constant conversation within with this power. And I don't always make it. I don't always do 100%, and I fail utterly. I mean, on my way here, I had a verbal fight with my boss. Denise from Brooklyn came out, and the guns were blazing. And I was like, Phil calls me. I'm like, you sure you want me to speak tonight? You know? But you see, I'm human with many flaws. And, you know, the external part of me, my ego, is going to take a lifetime maybe to chip away at. And those defects are going to show up in my life. The point is that I recognize them today. I ask God for guidance and help. And I actually employ these principles. And let me tell you something, it works. Like I said in the beginning, I used to knee-jerk, react to everything. When I don't do that and employ that pause, it says we pause when agitated, right? Let me check my motives. Am I doing this to get something out of it? Or am I doing it really just to be of service or kindness or love? You know, from that state of being, relationships fade away, don't they? There are no relationships. Everything is equanimous. Is that the correct word? There really are no relationships because we all just become partners in one. Think about that. Very true statement. You know, almost that word relationship is like, you know, almost the beginning of a war, right? We're partners. You know, if my motives are based in giving to you and you to me, equanimity, yeah, that's it, that's the word. But that's where we're really at. Because we are all connected by that spirit. You ever hear people say, man, I felt that guy's vibe, right? You could feel it off of people, can't you? The vibe, that's energy, that's spirit. That's something that comes from within us. Certain people, you just want to be around them. You're attracted to them. There's a light about them. And certain people, you just like want to throw holy water on and say, hey, I'm good. You know, when I'm living in this presence in my life and practicing these principles in my affairs, it just so happens that, you know, God's light just shines through each and every one of us. And I see you as God's child and you as God's child and everyone as God's child. And that is the most powerful experience that I have ever had in my life, ever, by employing this in my daily routine. One of the other coolest things I think about the 10th step is some of the promises that we get as a result of living this way of life. It says that the problem has been removed. It no longer exists for us. You know, I came around meetings since 1986, and when they talked about the promises, it was always just one promise. This promises throughout our book, promises, warnings, right, and prayers throughout the whole book. And the 10 step promises, I think, are the most powerful. Do you mean to tell me a hopeless variety, stage 4 alcoholic, who died and got brought back to life, that the problem has been removed? What? That's why when I get up here, I introduce myself as a recovered alcoholic. Because it's true. I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I didn't do it on my own. God has done that for me. Something that I could not do for myself. That's a powerful statement, Aaron, if you really get what that is. So in living this way of life, in this 10th step, there are three things when I work with women. I always ask them to implore right from the very beginning, because it says we begin this way of living as we clean up the past. I'm cleaning up the past right from 4, right? That's where I start to clean up the past, sweeping my side of the street. Ask yourself three things. What would love have me think? What would love have me say? What would love have me do? Just practice that throughout the day. You're going to fail. Come back to it. Come back to it. Come back to it. Fail all day long, but come back to it, right? And then they talk about this business of the 11th step and improving this conscious contact with God, seeking or sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, which happens, by the way, in the evening, at the end of my day, and in the morning. There is no 10th step nightly review. The 10th step is out there with you. The 11th step, I get home from work on a day like today, and normally when I get home from work, this is when I do this. Because if I go to a meeting and I get home, and I even sit down, I'm like this. And forget the 11th step is out the window. So I go into a room in my house. I call it my meditation room, where I've set up and I've designated it as my place to go, to sit in silence. And I sit there, and I do my meditation. And I sit in silence, and it varies. And I have my own practice, which is maybe different from some of yours, but it doesn't matter as long as you're doing it, right? That time in the morning that I take out and at the end of the day is what brings me present and allows me to stay present throughout the day. Because it's only in that present moment, only right here, right now, that I experience God. That's it. I can't live in a rerun movie of what happened even 10 minutes ago or go to the future, because that's where fear is, right? I can love you right now. Did I love you before? Yes, but I can't experience that. Right now, with breath, right here. The most vital thing that has, you know, taken me to an incredible level of love in my life is practicing prayer and meditation and seeking out, our book suggests, other ways, other avenues of where religious people are right. Whether it be your own faith that it brings you back to or something different. My personal journey, it's brought me to many things. My personal journey has brought me to seek out many different ways that people have found God, because I want to see how we're all alike, not how we're all different. And my experience with that has showed me something incredibly powerful. And it has created and abolished any prejudice that I have against any formalized religion, because I had many. You know, the second step, the whole chapter, we agnostics, says in order to have a relationship with God, it says we beg of you to be free from prejudice right from the start, even against organized religion. I was very prejudiced against the Catholic Church, being brought up Catholic and very confused by it, and then being, you know, made a born again Christian and, you know, all this stuff. And I became open and willing to go to a Cursillo, which opened my heart to the Catholic faith, realizing it's not the religion itself that's flawed. Men are flawed. You know, these people are experiencing love while I'm criticizing them. Right? So in here, it's a safe place. We're allowed to do that. You know, I also hear things like, I want to be more spiritual. And I don't know what that means, and I'm not making a joke about that. But we are spirits, encased in an earth suit. Zip open the earth suit, because that's who you are. Right? That's who we really are, if we can only recognize that. And the only way we get to recognize that is by staying immersed in this practice. If I'm not practicing this, how am I going to get to that point? If I'm not sitting in silence, stopping, not reaching out to you to co-sign my bullshit, how am I going to get in touch with that intuitive voice within me? I can't. While it's incredibly wonderful to keep writing inventory and, you know, when I get stuck and seek out my counsel with some people that I trust and share that with them, because I do believe that God speaks through them, the most powerful experience is to sit in silence and to experience that. I'll never forget our friend Peter gave a talk on this, and he got up to speak about 10-11. He just stood there. And everybody was like, what's he doing? You know, and he spoke about how uncomfortable that could be. You know, everybody's waiting for something to happen. You know, waiting for the next thing to happen. Why? It's already here. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, try to carry this message to alcoholics. Practice these principles in all our affairs. Do you see how all of this has prepared me for that? And that is really the purpose of all of this? How am I going to sit with another person who's dying and attempt to share my experience of what God can do for them in my life if I'm not employing these principles in my life? I can't. I can't do that. I could share my opinion. I could quote the book. I could become a bleeding deacon. I could act like a cult member almost of AA and actually drive people away, you know, and create a lot of contempt prior to investigation as a result of that. We don't have all of the answers here. All I know is that this is the process that worked for me. And this process has brought me to a greater expansion of my consciousness, of reality, which has been profound. Now, all of that and everything that I share with you about 10 and 11 is amazing. But nothing, and I will repeat this word, nothing has prepared me or given me the seeds for spiritual growth more than sitting one-on-one with another sister or brother who is dying. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's the simplest process. But yet we want to try to figure it out. Let me try to tweak this a little bit. You know, because I don't know. That's not what I heard about God. You know, and I heard this, and it's supposed to look this way. So ask the question, perhaps your definition might be not right. Is it possible, right? Joe Hawk, what a great teacher, always asking that question. Is it possible? Is it possible that God is love? Is it possible that God is passion, love, tolerance? Is that possible? Rather than Santa Claus in the sky with a big crown and a scepter. Is that a possibility? I don't know. Possible, isn't it? That becomes very personal to me. When I sit one-on-one with another woman, the most amazing experience, I scream it from every meeting that I sit at when we get to this point and we talk about the 12th step, because it's been the most powerful experience for me personally in my life. I first came to AA in 1986. And my thinking mind, my insane ego, told me, I'm not as bad as you. And I checked the boxes and out the door I was. Meanwhile, I was smoking crack with a little baby in the next room. But, I'm not that bad. It's just a crack. Let me get rid of that, and I could still have a few drinks. By 2007, November 11th, when God finally separated me from alcohol and drugs, it's a long road for me, right? I had experienced and walked down a path that was very shameful, very ridden with guilt as a mother and a woman. And I don't care what anybody says, there are still double standards, even in this modern society that we live in, if you are a woman and you're a drunk. And for me, even more so, based on my false belief systems of the world I grew up in, born in 1956 in Brooklyn. You know, every woman's supposed to, like, have an apron on and be in the kitchen cooking while daddy goes out to work. You know, there's this image in my mind of Pleasantville. You know, it's really what I'm supposed to be. Yeah, I'm supposed to make sure my windows are clean. Oh, no, Aunt Mary's coming over. You know. And let me tell you something, I did not live up to that image, that false belief system, which I really didn't know I had until I started to do this process. But when I really got honest, I really got to see who I was, and I realized that's why I have all that guilt and shame. God has not sent one woman into my life that has not had an experience that has been similar to mine. What about that? I just got goosebumps. And what does that do for each and every one of us? Let me tell you something. I came here 2007. You know what my greatest fear was? I'm going to relapse again. I'm going to relapse again because God's not going to remove this guilt and shame. And I can't bear to look at myself in the mirror. And I can't bear to look at my children's faces after what I've done to them. And I can't bear to look at those people that I harmed. And I said that to my sponsor. I said, I don't know, man. I'm going to give this a try, but that's always taken me out the door. With each and every soul God places in my path, all of that crap has become useful. Are you kidding me? It just blows me away. I see that stuff that was sordid, horrible, that I didn't want anybody to see, can save somebody's life today. There is nothing more powerful than that. And I will not ever experience anything more powerful in regards to spiritual growth than that. Ever. Because that is my purpose on life. I have never felt such a sense of fulfillment within. I know why I'm alive now. I know why you kept me here now. I know why I had those experiences now. And it's an experience you must not miss. Our book talks about it. That's why some of us in here, you see, get so passionate about this stuff and are so willing to talk about it. Because to see the light go on in another human being's eyes that has a dead soul is a miracle. And we get to see that here. We get to see somebody who is dead come back to life. The promises in the third step tell us that we will begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter, death. Man. I'm talking, I can't stop talking about this, but I guess you got some kind of plan. But it's truly an incredible, you know, incredible journey for me. And it's not only in my walk with you guys, with my people of my tribe, Punta Kinte, because I got to hear drunk talk. You know, I've heard a lot of people pray themselves out of the rooms of AA. I can have a spiritual awakening here, but I need to be around you. I need to hear drunk talk. I need to be with my fellow drunks. That's where I'm most useful. But let me tell you something. I'm useful out there. There isn't, if I'm awake and I see it, right, there's one person during the day at least that God places into my path that I can't be of service to in some way, shape, or form. And my boss teases me. He calls me the Zen master. Yeah, but that's cool. He loves me. You know, so jabbing from the jar and I can't stop. But that's my experience with 10, 11, and 12. Powerful when we really apply these principles to our life. Thank you.